Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this half-hour segment, we're going to begin by taking a look at events related to the bombing of Pan Am 103 in December of 1988. Then we're going to take a look at an article dealing with Manzer El-Kassar, an arms dealer, terrorist, supplier, and drug dealer who was linked to the bombing of Pan Am 103, not only in the Pan Am Insurance Investigators Report, the Interfor Report, but also mentioned in connection with Pan Am 103 and that the bombing of same in the remarkable recent book, The Secret War Against the Jews, by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens. We're then going to deal with events in Argentina. Manzer El-Kassar's name has come up in connection with a couple of bombings in Argentina, or at least one bombing in Argentina. We're going to take a look at the resignation of the Argentine Justice Minister, a curious attack right around that same time on the brother of President Carlos Menem of Argentina, and we're also going to take a look at the arrest of some Argentine policemen right around that same time in connection with one of those very same bombings. Research credit on the first article goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator. And by the way, the Pan Am 103 bombing is discussed in RFA 35, RFA 38, and a two-part half-hour series, or two half-hour segments, recorded in the fall of 1995. Dave White researched these articles, or this article, I should say, from the Sunday Telegraph from Britain, of December 24th, 1995. This is an article by Con Coughlin, or Coughlin, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, C-O-U-G-H-L-I-N. It's headlined, Secret Deal Frees Key Lockerbie Suspect. It reads in part as follows. Germany is preparing the early release from jail of a key suspect in the Lockerbie investigation, seriously undermining efforts to find the culprits behind Britain's worst air disaster. As relatives of the 270 victims last week commemorated the 7th anniversary of the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103, German officials were finalizing arrangements to free a leading Palestinian terrorist, Hafez Dalkamoni, next spring. He led a 14-strong Palestinian cell rounded up in Frankfurt weeks before the disaster on December 21, 1988. Dalkamoni and an accomplice, Abdel Gadanfar, were later jailed for terrorist offenses. But the other members of the cell were released, and Scottish detectives believe they were involved in planting a suitcase laden with explosives on the jet at Frankfurt Airport. Dalkamoni was jailed in 1991 for 15 years for trying to blow up an American military train. But as part of a secret deal with Iran, Dalkamoni is to be released after serving less than a third of his sentence. Gadanfar, jailed for 12 years, was released in secret last year as part of the same deal and deported to Syria. His release provoked a major diplomatic row with Britain after details of the agreement were revealed in the Sunday Telegraph. Douglas Hurd, HURD, Foreign Secretary at the time, had to take the unprecedented step of replying to an adjournment debate demanded by Tom Dalyell, D-A-L-Y-E-L-L, the Labour MP who has campaigned tirelessly on the relative's behalf. Mr. Dalyell believes freeing Dalkamoni will seriously undermine efforts to find out who is responsible for the disaster. Dr. Jim Swire, spokesman for the Lockerbie relatives, added, quote, "We firmly believe that Dalkamoni and his gang were the prime movers, and the Germans are determined to conceal the truth," unquote. Attempts by Scottish detectives to interview the two terrorists have been frustrated by the German authorities, who were embarrassed by their decision to release the rest of Dalkamoni's group. In a letter to Mr. Dalyell this year, John Major, the Prime Minister, confirmed that the Germans only allowed interviews with Dalkamoni and Gadanfar by their own investigators. Scottish police were only allowed as witnesses. The deal with Iran stems from a controversial visit to Bonn by intelligence chief Ali Falayan to meet Bernd Schmittbauer, his opposite number, in late 1993. Gadanfar was released soon afterwards, and arrangements were set in train for Dalkamoni's release. Plans to free Dalkamoni will only fan the flames of the Lockerbie relative's suspicions that there is an international cover-up. And by the way, I'm not sure about the pronunciation on some of these names. Now, again, the bombing of Pan Am 103 is discussed in RFA 35, RFA 38, and in a two-part half-hour series recorded in the fall of 1995 and available from Spitfire. The Pan Am 103 bombing is a lengthy subject, and to make an exceedingly long story very short, it appears that although the culprits were Iranian-backed terrorists, that there was deep complicity on the part of fascist elements within U.S. and German intelligence as well, and that both German and U.S. intelligence have been involved in a cover-up. The Pan Am 103 Insurance Investigators Report has mentioned the name of an arms dealer, a terrorist backer, and a drug deal with, as I like to say, more connections and a switchboard. That man's name is Manzer Al-Kassar, and I've dealt with Al-Kassar at considerable length in RFA 32, RFA 35, and RFA 38. Now, our Manzer Al-Kassar's name is being brought up in connection with a couple of bombings that took place in Argentina. In particular, a March 1992 bombing of the Israeli embassy, and there was also speculation concerning the use of the Al-Kassar-generated explosive, namely Exogen, in a July 1994 bombing of a Jewish community center. Research credit on the following article goes to a member of the listening audience. This article was gleaned by that member from the Northern California Jewish Bulletin of June 21st, 1996. The Jewish Telegraphic Agency is the wire service responsible for this article. It's datelined Buenos Aires and headlined, "Syrian Linked to Bombings." It reads in part as follows. A Swiss court investigating an illegal sale of explosives may have found an important clue in two unresolved bombings in Argentina. The Swiss are probing a shipment of several tons of the high-power explosive Exogen, according to Spanish journalist Norberto Bermudez. The firm Expal, E-X-P-A-L, manufactures the explosive in Spain. Most of the shipment in question went to Croatia, but a fraction was rerouted to Argentina shortly before the March 17, 1992 bombing of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires. Exogen may have been used in that attack, which left 29 dead and some 100 wounded. Bermudez, who came to Buenos Aires to deliver a copy of the Swiss findings to the Argentine court investigating the case, said that, quote, "The Exogen passed customs at the city's Ezeiza airport," E-Z-E-I-Z-A is the name of that airport, unquote. Also, Exogen may have been used in the July 18, 1994 bombing of the AMIA Jewish Community Center that left 86 dead and at least 300 wounded. Swiss investigators said the explosives were sold by Syrian arms dealer Manzer Al-Kassar. Al-Kassar became a well-known figure in Argentina after the public learned that he had obtained Argentine citizenship papers and a passport in record time. Al-Kassar was investigated by Spanish authorities on charges of having cooperated with the terrorists who hijacked the Aquile Loro cruise ship in 1985. Al-Kassar was cleared of all charges in Spain, but remains under investigation in Argentina. Again, Manzer Al-Kassar is an individual with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. According to John Loftus, in his remarkable book, The Secret War Against the Jews, hardcover edition, St. Martin's Press, 1994, Al-Kassar was the main man involved in the Iran-Contra scandal for the United States. He was the main arms dealer involved in not only obtaining East Bloc arms for the Contras, but also the main man involved in the transfers of arms to Iran as well. The DEA has credited Manzer Al-Kassar with bringing approximately 20% of the heroin imported into the United States in each year. He also was an individual very much involved with international terrorism as well as international fascist elements. He was very close to the terrorist operations of Abu Abbas as well as Abu Nidal. His name was also mentioned in connection with the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 in a couple of different reports. It was mentioned in connection with that bombing in the aforementioned Secret War Against the Jews, and also the Interfor report, the Pan Am 103 Insurance Investigators report, links Manzer Al-Kassar as well as elements of U.S. intelligence to the Pan Am 103 bombing. The Interfor report has been widely dissed. I personally have never seen an effective refutation of the claims made by that report, although it has been widely attacked. Manzer Al-Kassar, again an individual with more connections than a switchboard, he was being protected from prosecution in Spain by the Bush administration, or at least the Bush administration's ambassador to Spain, Joseph Zapala. Shortly after George Bush was defeated for re-election, the Spanish authorities indicted Monzer Alcazar. However, one of the leading witnesses against him went out a window. Another one had his family kidnapped, and the DEA evidence against Alcazar was not permitted to be introduced into evidence, so he was acquitted in connection with the Achille Lauro hijacking, despite overwhelming evidence against him. Alcazar did the banking for many of his weapon and drug deals with the infamous BCCI, again an institution with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. He had strong connections not only to the Abu Abbas group, but to a German neo-Nazi and veteran of the German Sportgruppe Hoffmann, namely Otfried Hepp. And again, Monzer Alcazar is an individual whose connections run around the world and who, if he ever began to spill the beans, could sully a number of names in connection with his operations. He also is very well connected to international fascist elements. He utilized the Merex firm, a German arms firm with connections going back to residual Third Reich elements, as well as the post-World War II Odessa Nazi underground. Merex was founded by the legendary Otto Skorzeny, Hitler's commando extraordinaire, one of the most important individuals, or one of the most influential individuals, also one of the most important in the post-World War II period, although his name is not generally known to most students of political affairs. Skorzeny was one of the most decorated members of the SS, one of Hitler's personal favorites, and one of the directors of the post-World War II Odessa Underground, a key functionary of the Reinhard Gehlen spy organization, and an individual who worked for the CIA at the end of World War II, or after World War II. And again, this article mentions Monzer Alcazar and an exogen explosive in connection with the March 17, 1992 bombing of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires. That bombing followed the disclosure of the post-World War II presence of numerous Nazi refugees in Argentina. To serious students of World War II and political affairs, that came as no surprise at all. However, it did generate a lot of headlines in the mainstream press, which is unusual for reports of fugitive Nazi war criminals. Normally, they don't get much press at all, particularly their well-documented presence in Argentina. I would also note that the July 18, 1994 bombing of the Amiya Jewish Center also came after disclosures of the presence of Erich Priebke and other Nazi war criminals or accused war criminals in Argentina. Priebke has recently been extradited or has been extradited to Italy, where he is now on trial. We're going to cover his situation in future broadcasts. I would note, too, that that Jewish center had been a repository for various records concerning fugitive Nazi war criminals living in Argentina. Indeed, Argentina has long been a harbor for fascist elements, and recently the Argentine justice minister has been forced to resign because of alleged fascist and neo-Nazi connections and implications that because of those connections, he was less than vigorous, shall we say, in his investigation of the two as yet unsolved bombings. The following article was carried in the San Francisco Chronicle on Friday, July 12th of 1996. This article is from the Los Angeles Times, its dateline Buenos Aires, and headlined Argentine Quits Neo-Nazi Past. It's subtitled, Justice Minister Had Belonged to Anti-Semitic Group. The article reads in part as follows. Argentina's Minister of Justice left his post yesterday after 3 weeks of controversy over revelations that he belonged to neo-Nazi organizations as a young man. Rodolfo Barra, 48, last name B-A-R-R-A, attended his final cabinet meeting yesterday morning and said he was resigning to end the criticism of the government of President Carlos Menem. Quote, in politics, when you can save your government problems, I believe you have to do it, unquote, Barra told a Buenos Aires radio station. A self-proclaimed Catholic conservative, Barra had endured increasing complaints from the media and the Jewish community about his dubious past in a society where the wounds of anti-Semitism remain fresh. Barra admitted belonging as a teenager to Tacuara, T-A-C-U-A-R-A, a neo-Nazi organization that committed acts of anti-Semitic brutality in the 1960s. As a 27-year-old student, he is alleged to have participated in a violent purge of the National University led by an openly fascist rector. And a newspaper charged Sunday that Botta was arrested as a youth in the firebombing of a synagogue, a charge he reportedly denied. This background made Botta especially unsuited to run the nation's troubled justice system, critics said, citing traditions of dictatorship, anti-Semitism, and neo-Nazism in Argentina. Botta was the titular head of the investigators probing the unsolved cases of two car bomb attacks against Jewish targets, which are thought to be the work of Middle Eastern terrorists and Argentine accomplices. I would note that a couple of German nationals were detained after the 1994 bombing, but quickly let go. So please note that whether or not it's relevant, on Friday, July 12th, there was an account of the Argentine justice minister resigning because of alleged neo-Nazi connections in his past. And again, fascist elements in Argentina, fugitive fascist elements, are very, very well documented. What I want to note for the members of the listening audience is the close proximity in time between a number of events. These may not be related, but on the other hand, they might be. Now, note that the L.A. Times, as well as the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, July 12th, carried that story about the resignation of Justice Minister Botta. The following day's Los Angeles Times carried an account of a curious armed attack on the brother of Argentine President Carlos Menem, and this attack has aroused a lot of questions, or has generated a lot of questions in Argentina as the reason for the attack. The following article is from the Los Angeles Times of Saturday, July 13th of 1996. This article is by Sebastian Rotella, R-O-T-E-L-L-A, of the Los Angeles Times. It's dateline Buenos Aires and headlined, "Attack on President's Brother Confounds Uneasy Argentina." The article reads in part as follows. The attackers had targeted the home of one of Argentina's most powerful men, Senator Eduardo Menem, a leader of the ruling Peronist Party, and the brother of President Carlos Menem. Just before midnight a week ago, gunmen, short-haired, 25 to 35 years old, stormed the garage of the senator's red-brick, two-story house in the exclusive suburb of Nunez. They confronted five federal police bodyguards using the garage as a command post. After a point-blank gunfight, the attackers fled in a stolen sedan. They left behind a dead police sergeant, a gravely wounded corporal, and a bona fide mystery that has confounded Argentina. The assault on a figure of Eduardo Menem's stature is unprecedented since civilian rule was reestablished here in 1983. Menem, 58, is a 13-year senator from the province of La Rioja, an advisor to his brother, and provisional president of the Senate, third in the chain of presidential succession. As days pass, speculation is heating up. Was the incident a terrorist attack by extremists of the kind who were active earlier this decade? Was it a political message to the Menem clan, which has held power since 1989? Was it a mafia-style hit linked to business disputes or corruption scandals? Or was it simply a blunder by robbers who barged into the wrong house? A few officials inclined toward the latter, the least politically difficult theory. But others, including police veterans, find it hard to believe that a gang of armed home invaders would not scout a site first and discovered it belonged to a dignitary with guards. The government has tightened security. An unusually large contingent of police surrounded the president and his cabinet during outdoor ceremonies this week for Argentine Independence Day. The senator, who was in the kitchen with relatives just a few yards away during the gun battle in his garage, has made it clear that he does not rule out any scenario. But he doubts the easy version. Quote, "It does not make sense to me that the criminals did not know that it was my house," unquote, he told reporters, again quoting, "I don't believe they saw the garage door open and decided to rob," unquote. He said he had received vague, threatening telephone calls. In the hours before the shootout, a caller seemed to be checking if his home was occupied, ringing his unlisted number several times only to hang up. An official close to the senator said in an interview that Menem believes that mere robbers would not conduct an assault with such ferocity. Quote, "They practically executed the police sergeant," unquote, the official said, again quoting, "Of course, if it was a political attack, Then there is the question of the motive, unquote. If the assailants were professional assassins or kidnappers, they might have been expected to carry more powerful weapons or to strike when Menem was on the street, the official said, noting, quote, I think he would prefer that it were a robbery. If not, then it is an attack on the entire system, not just on his person, unquote. Well, again, I personally have far more questions than answers concerning this particular attack. However, among the questions I have is whether perhaps this attack was intended by fascist elements in Argentina and perhaps the post-World War II SS underground, the legendary Odessa, which is still operative, sometimes portrayed as a fictional entity. In fact, it is very real to this day and has been one of the most profound players on the world power political scene, albeit in an underground and behind-the-scenes capacity. I would note that shortly after President Menem agreed to extradite former SS officer Erich Priebke to Italy to stand trial for the Adriatine Caves massacre. President Menem's, in fact, it was a couple of days afterward, President Menem's son was killed in the crash of a helicopter. Again, I have more questions than answers about that crash, and I'm not saying there was necessarily anything suspicious about it. However, with regard to both this attack on Menem's brother shortly after the resignation of Justice Minister Barra because of his alleged fascist past, and as well as with regard to the death of Menem's son shortly after he signed the extradition agreement, I wonder whether perhaps a message was being sent to President Menem that indeed the past is still very much alive and that he should not cross the very powerful fascist elements in Argentina, which in turn are connected to very powerful fascist elements around the world. Again, the resignation of Botta was carried in the papers of July 12th, and accounts of this attack on Menem's brother was carried the next day, July 13th of 1996. I would note, too, that the daughter of Carlos Menem was linked to the scandal concerning Monzer Alcazar, and indeed Monzer Alcazar's name came up in connection with, actually perhaps it was President Menem's wife, the scandal known as Lomagate. In any event, RFA 38 carries a lengthy account of the Lomagate scandal and the connections of Carlos Menem's regime to that and the apparent role played in that by Monzer Alcazar. Now, note again that the account of the resignation of Justice Minister Barra took place. The accounts were carried in the papers of July 12th. The next day, there was the account of the attack on Carlos Menem's brother, perhaps connected to that, I don't know. I wonder whether perhaps those articles were connected with the following story as well. This carried in the San Francisco Examiner of Sunday, July 14th of 1996. The following is a Reuters story datelined Buenos Aires, Argentina, and headlined, Argentine Police Held in Bombing. The article reads, 11 Buenos Aires police officers were arrested, and six more were being sought in the probe of a 1994 car bomb attack on a Jewish center that killed 86 people, the police chief said Saturday. Chief Pedro Klodzik, K-L-O-D-C-Z-Y-K, told Radio Continental that a federal judge had ordered the police arrested for the alleged illegal sale of vehicles, including one believed to have been used in the attack on the AMIA Center, A-M-I-A Center, in July of 1994. The police were accused of, quote, violation of the duties of a public official, unquote, and will probably be brought to testify Monday before federal judge Juan José Galeano, G-A-L-E-A-N-O. So again, we have three events occurring in rapid succession. The resignation of Justice Minister Barra because of alleged fascist activity in the past. Of course, he was in charge of the investigations into the two as yet unsolved bombings in Argentina, perhaps linked to the forces of international fascism as well as Middle Eastern terrorism. As we have seen in numerous archive shows, including RFA 22, there are strong connections between the international fascist community and Middle Eastern terrorism, those connections going back to the World War II period. Then the next day, July 13th, there were accounts in papers of a violent attack on the residence of President Carlos Menem's brother. That attack left a policeman dead. And then the following day, we see accounts of the arrest of some Argentine policemen for dealing in stolen vehicles, and one of those vehicles was believed to have been involved in the attack on the AMI Center in July of 1994. Now, again, there clearly is not enough information to say yes. Definitely, there is a firm connection between these three events, yet I don't think it's an unreasonable question to ask whether perhaps these events might be connected. It's what I call, and what I have called for so often on this program, food for thought and grounds for further research. Again, I have the same questions, not answers, but questions concerning the very close proximity in time between Carlos Menem signing the Italian extradition request for Eric Priebke and the death of his son in a helicopter crash. Certainly accidents happen, helicopters crash, but again, given the powerful role of fascist elements in Argentina and given the unforgiving nature of the legendary Odessa, the post-World War II SS Underground, again an institution with more connections than a switchboard, very closely connected to the government of Germany in the post-World War II period and very profoundly connected to our own government and our intelligence services in particular, I don't think that's an unreasonable question to ask as well. Before I wrap this segment up, I would like to remind you that the half-hour segments that I have been recording for the last year or so are available from a service called Spitfire. Spitfire, it can be contacted at P.O. Box 1179, Box 1179, that is in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D. The zip code is 95005, again, 95005. There is an email address for Spitfire. The email address is alcalame at ix.netcom.com. Once again, the full address, the mailing address, Spitfire, Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address, alcalame at ix.netcom.com. A number of people have asked me over the years when I'm going to begin doing some writing, and very briefly, I'm in the process of attempting to launch my own political journal. I can't give details about this, since this is a project which, knock knock, I will be making some money from. However, if you'd like to find out more about it, the title of the publication is Other Means. It's taken from the famous quote by Prussian military theoretician Karl von Clausewitz that war is the continuation of politics by other means. Other Means can be contacted at P.O. Box 191710, Box 191710, that is in San Francisco, California, 94119-1710. That address again, Other Means, P.O. Box 191710, San Francisco, California, 94119-1710. 1710. Alrighty. That, again, the address for Other Means. I also have an email address. By the way, I do not have time, unfortunately, to answer correspondence, either written or by email. This is not due to arrogance on my part, simply due to the fact that I have too many commitments to respond to correspondence. However, if you have information you'd like to communicate to me, I have an email address, demory, D-E-M-O-R-Y, at well.com, D-E-M-O-R-Y at well.com. That concludes this half-hour segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.